Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You better cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk to Melissa Boteach from the Center for American Progress about unemployment and the threat that's coming up at the end of this month to cut some 2 million people off of the unemployment rolls, leaving them basically screwed days before Christmas. Merry Christmas. Brought to you by the Grand Obstructionist Party. Also in the second hour, we're going to talk to Michael Tehan, Vice President of Espresso Parts. Source, espressoparts.com is their website. Business. He's from the group Business for Shared Prosperity. And what they're going to be talking about is, look, these Bush tax cuts, sane, rational people understand. Right now, things are tough. Things are extremely difficult, and what we need are smart policies and rational people sitting in Washington. Obviously, that's not going to happen. The Republicans want to extend the tax breaks for the top 2%, $700 billion. You know, when you hear we're going to extend tax cuts for 2% of the population, you kind of go, well, it's only 2%. We should do that. When you hear that it's $700 billion, at a time when we're talking about shutting down the federal government because we're not going to raise the debt ceiling, somebody's got to step up and say, hey, wait a minute. Before we have this end-of-the-world scenario and we cause a global collapse because we got a couple of tea-twizzlers who got a bug up their behinds, maybe we should call some rational, sane people. Maybe. Maybe have that conversation. And that's what we're going to have with Michael Tehan. And, of course, in the next segment, we're going to talk to our good friend, attorney Erwin Aronson, about the unemployment situation and really how we got to this mess. If you look at what's gone on, we have allowed the fund, which is an insurance fund, to be sorely underfunded. And the scheme that went into this, you got to give the Chamber of Commerce credit. You really honestly and truthfully do. They had a long-range plan, and they executed it. And along with us, they're going to execute a bunch of us. You know, I go back to that 1971 Powell memo to tell you how methodical these folks are and how good they are at sticking to their game plan. The Chamber of Commerce got this memo from a soon-to-be Supreme Court justice that said, how can we take the media back? How can we take the message back? And if you read that memo, just Google Powell memo. Down the line, step by step, inch by inch, he laid it out, and they did it. They invested in it when they were losing money. Rush Limbaugh didn't make a dime for 10 years. Yet, they kept pushing money into him. Bill O'Reilly never made a profit on radio. Never. Yet they kept him on for several years. Because they understand it's about their message, and they're going to fund that. So it'll be an interesting conversation with Erwin. I don't know if you saw, Lisa Murkowski is the He's the senator-elect of Alaska. Joe Miller is challenging 8,000 of the votes in Alaska, which he has a right to do. The only problem is he's down by more than 10,000. So you figure that one out. I don't know how he's going to squeeze 10,000 votes out of 8,000. But basically, the Republican Party in Alaska has said, you know what, Joe, sorry, but you know, you screwed things up. You really overplayed your hand. You were really a nutcase candidate. And you lost because you were just a really bad, bad candidate. And this woman, who not many people were thrilled of, is the first write-in candidate in 50 years to win a senatorial write-in candidate. First time in 50 years. Does anybody know who the last one was? Raise your hand if you know. The last person to mount a successful senatorial write-in bid was none other than South Carolina Dixiecrat Strom Thurmond. Back then, he ran as a Democrat back in 1954. A decade later, old Strom switched parties, became a Republican because of the Civil Rights Act. And like Trent Lott said, America would have been a different place if Strom had been elected president. I think there's a lot of truth in that. A lot of truth in that. Also, Politico reported today that Democrats elected Nancy Pelosi as their minority leader. They're saying two brutal days of arguing behind closed doors, but the final vote was 150-43. So I don't know how brutal and how ugly things got. You? I think this is a media construct.
No, I think you're right. I mean, all you have to do is look at the makeup of the Democrats that are left, and they're considerably more liberal. So just from that perspective, it makes sense that she won, and she won fairly handily. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't, from what I understand, there were outgoing Democrats who were allowed to speak, and they were saying, you know, she really hurt us in the election. There's only one problem. Those Democrats that are leaving for home, they really don't get a vote. They can express their opinion, but they don't get a vote. And in the end, they elected her. You know, she's a strong leader, but, you know, she conjures up images of this wild, crazy liberal. And the Republicans, you would think she was running in every seat in the country if you listen to the Republicans.
Well, she was the Democrat in every race. She was. I mean, I saw her face more than I saw anyone else's, even in Toomey's ads. And I don't know why she popped up in his ads, but, you know, they had to tie Joe Sestak to Pelosi, and they had to tie him to Obama. And, you know, people had this. They really made her out to be a villain.
Well, the funny thing is they tried to tie her to Blue Dog Democrats. My own congressman is a Blue Dog, and you would have thought that, you know, the Republican was running against Nancy Pelosi, which is ridiculous when you look at the record.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The Republican messaging machine, any Democrat that's running is automatically the most liberal ever to be devised. You know, Bill Clinton was the most liberal president ever to serve in office. Yet I don't know very many people, even thoughtful conservatives, who look at Bill Clinton and say, well, yeah, he was a liberal. No, I don't know any. He was a very moderate conservative Democrat. And then Obama becomes the nominee, and all of a sudden, he's the most liberal in the history of ever. They did the same thing to Kerry. Most liberal ever. Most liberal ever?
I mean, you could actually make the point, if you want to go that down that silly route, actually, Richard Nixon, in many ways, is actually further to the left than Bill Clinton.
Eisenhower would be a socialist in today's, because he actually thought about, oh, I don't know, investing in tomorrow. And that's one of the things that really has me nuts, is we're talking about all, well, we need to ban earmarks. And you even got Democrats who are on board with this. And look, they've really made the word earmark another one of those nasty four-letter words. And as I've been saying for a while, there are some earmarks that I don't agree with, but some of them kind of do. You know, like the building projects that happen. Now, unless we can figure out another way of doing that, which they're not talking about, they're just, we're going to ban it, which, you know, I think it's going to harm us in the long run. Because as I've been looking around, and it took listening to a religious radio program to make me wake up and realize that we've been living off of my grandparents' generation. We've been living off of their investment. And he told the tale, this preacher told the tale of someone coming in to sell him something. I forget what it was. But the guy who, the salesman looked around him, wow, this is marvelous. And the preacher said, wow, you know, I hadn't realized that we had been left this. Because it was one of these very ornate churches, unlike some of them that you see today, look like shopping malls or, you know, storefronts. My question is, what am I going to leave my grandchildren? What kind of investments are we making in right now for them in the future? And the truth is we're not making any. I had hoped when President Obama took office that we would leave a legacy of solar panels and alternative energy. Hasn't happened as quickly as I would have liked. To be honest, none of this stuff happens as quickly as we would like. But now, starting in January, on January 3rd, I think any movement towards that's going to end. We're going to see Republicans cutting things to the bone or wanting to, and stalling and delaying until they get their way like petulant children. And nothing, no investment for the future. You know, I understand consuming for today. I do. But I also understand we need roads and bridges and high-speed rail, and we need that next century, that 21st century investment that we have not had. We need to upgrade our electrical grid. Been needing that for a couple of generations now. If you remember, Jerry Brown ran for president years ago on the premise that we were going to rewire the entire country. We're going to train electricians and rewire every house in the country. Rewire our grid, because I'm not sure what the number was, but it was something like 80% of electricity is lost in transmission, which is just mind-boggling if that's true. But we have better technology. And it, you know, I remember a couple years ago, remember when all the lights went out in Ohio and part of Pennsylvania? A failure of us to invest, to keep up. Not even invest for the future, because we know all of these things are going to grow. Our needs are going to grow. The demand is going to grow. You know, I look at some of the building projects and the road projects going on around this area, and I keep going, why aren't we building third lanes? Why aren't we doing things for 10, 15 years down the road when we know these roads are going to be clogged? You know, why aren't we doing smart things? Why aren't we doing the smart investing that needs to happen? And the truth is we have visionless leaders. We have visionless leaders who stalemate, who gridlock, and who tie things up. And look what we get. You know, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not stuck in traffic for a while here, coming down here. What's it going to be in 10, 15, 20 years? How much worse? And then it's too late. You know, I look at New York City as a perfect example. There's never a day that goes by that you're not stuck in traffic for at least an hour. You've got to put in an hour and a half or 2 hours of commute time if you're going anywhere during the day there. Because they're that badly gridlocked. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Healthcare, the casino, maybe a little bit about that. Some other things, banking, some good news on the banking front. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Stick around. We want the world.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO will continue to aggressively pursue a working family agenda as the new Republican majority takes power in the U.S. House. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says creating jobs and a solid economic recovery are top priorities.
Working Americans will not rest until good jobs are created and the people responsible for destroying the jobs are held accountable. The AFL-CIO continue to mobilize every day to create jobs and demand that Republicans and Democrats step up to the plate.
Trumka says voters want both political parties to work together, but that doesn't mean compromises that continue to favor the corporate and wealthy elite.
People think that Washington is broken and leadership on both sides of the aisle needs to step up and work together. But that doesn't mean compromising just for the sake of it or caving in to what's best for corporations and the wealthy. It means working together to create jobs and help working families.
The end is near for many jobless workers depending on their benefits, Jesse Russell reports.
At the end of this month, 73 weeks of extended unemployment benefits provided by the federal government will expire if not reauthorized by Congress. If the extension isn't reauthorized, it could see 2 million long-term unemployed falling off the dole and no longer receiving checks. The number of unemployed beyond the 99-week mark is unknown because the government doesn't keep data on those individuals. On Friday in New York City, a group of protesters who have taken on the moniker 99ers because they have surpassed the extended 99 weeks called on Congress to add an additional 20 weeks of benefits.
National Nurses United has scored an organizing win in the Orlando, Florida area. 550 RNs will now be represented by the union after an overwhelming vote by nurses at Osceola Regional Medical Center. It's the first of several union elections to be held in coming weeks at Hospital Corporation of America Hospitals in Florida. National Nurses United says the vote is a dramatic step forward for the National Nurses Organizing Committee in Florida. Years of pressure on companies using tomatoes from Florida Tomato Growers Exchange has finally borne fruit for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Florida Tomato Growers has signed an agreement that will provide tomato pickers one penny more for every pound of tomatoes picked. The deal will also improve working conditions for the workers and allows the coalition to provide training for workers in the field. The campaign started with the coalition putting pressure on Yum brands, which owns brands like Taco Bell and KFC. Once Yum signed on to a pledge to pay workers more per pound, the workers targeted other fast food companies like McDonald's. The agreement with the exchange is historic because even with the buyers agreeing to the higher wage, the growers were reluctant to give in. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody stand. Stand up together. Come together. Organize. That's the message. You know, I'm looking at the end of the month. 2 million people getting kicked off the unemployment rolls if the Republicans do nothing. If they do what they do best, obstruct, delay, gridlock. 2 million people. If those 2 million people said we're not going to take it and they came together and marched on Washington, what do you think would happen? You got to wonder. I've got Irwin Aronson on the phone, our good friend and an attorney here in the area. Irwin, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Rick. Hi, Jake. How you guys doing?
We are doing great. You know, I'm looking at this unemployment thing, and I'm just scratching my head, wondering where we're going to go with this.
Well, hell, I've been scratching my head about this unemployment thing for basically my entire career, probably the last 38, 39 years. And I'm thunderstruck now at this combination of contrived crises that the business community is imposing on the victims of this rotten economy and really and truly the victims of the Wall Street cowboys that have imposed it all on us.
You know, and I look at this and I go, how did we get into this mess? The state of Pennsylvania, $3 billion in the hole now. My question, I guess, is how did we get here? You know, as I remember, you know, back when the last time I was laid off, which was 1991, the rates of reimbursement, the rates of compensation were much higher than they are today.
Well, the rates of compensation really are pretty flat and constant. And there's a history lesson that needs to go on here for me to explain how we got to this mess we're in today.
Well, let's get to that.
Well, it's a sad history. It's a history of the Chamber of Commerce, now known as the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry, engaged in long-term, very, very precise but pejoratively clever planning. The history of unemployment compensation law in Pennsylvania goes back to 1935. Unemployment compensation actually is created through a provision of the Federal Social Security Act, which provides, among other things, certain subsidies to states that have conforming unemployment compensation laws. Pennsylvania adopted its first unemployment compensation law in 1935. And at that time, in 1935, the taxable wage base on which employers paid unemployment compensation taxes was 335% of the statewide average wage.
Okay.
Move the clock forward. By 1986, that percentage of the statewide average wage on which employers paid unemployment compensation taxes had fallen so dramatically that when the General Assembly in 1986 increased the taxable wage base on which employers pay unemployment compensation insurance premiums, also known as taxes, was increased in 86, it became approximately 50% of the statewide average wage at that time in Pennsylvania. Now, in 1972, we amended the unemployment compensation law to provide for an automatic escalator in benefits so that benefits reflected the statewide average wage in the state. So the benefits go up each year and have gone up each year retroactive to the prior year come January for the following year. But that taxable wage base has remained flat. So that 1986 number of $8,400 on which employers pay taxes, in other words, no matter how much somebody earns, their employer only pays unemployment compensation contributions to the state based on a maximum of $8,400 a year.
So if I made $70,000 this year, they would only pay on the first $8,400.
If you made $70,000 this year, they'd pay on $8,400. If you made $150,000, they'd pay on $8,400. And if you made $8,500, they'd pay on $8,400.
How much did I pay?
Well, you pay on every single penny you earn. Since 1986 in Pennsylvania, there has been a tax on employees, on workers, and that is on every dollar a worker earns, assuming the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund has met certain triggers. What that means is every time you get a raise, the State Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund gets a raise, but the employers pay nothing more.
Let me ask you this, Irwin. Let's say that the employers and the employees paid the exact same amount. Let's say that the employers were paying right along with the employees at the same rate. Where would we be today?
Oh, we don't even have to go anywhere near that far. That is a dreamland. Let me give you a reality land. Reality land is that if we had employers in Pennsylvania paying on the same 50% of the statewide average wage today that they paid in 1986, a quarter of a century ago, we would have collected $3.2 billion more during the period than we have collected in revenue today. What that means is that $3 billion contrived debt that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago would not exist. And if that $3 billion debt didn't exist, workers wouldn't be having to pay any taxes to support the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund. But now, because the chamber in its vision and its drive to hammer down workers who are victimized by the workplace, we have this contrived crisis. And this contrived crisis is described by the people on the other side as Pennsylvania's benefits being too high and eligibility being too liberal. So in order to pay down the debt that these people created by never having paid their fair share once, it's going to be to suggest that we slash benefits and dramatically restrict eligibility, exactly a time when people are suffering through the worst economic climate, the worst jobs climate in my lifetime.
You know, when I look at that, you know, to me, it's a perfect storm for business, because then they can make people desperate enough to take poorer wages, which really drag us all down.
Well, they not only drag us down in an immediate sense and create this race to the bottom, but they're self-fulfilling. If we drive down wages, then we drive down the statewide average wage. If we drive down the statewide average wage, then we drive down benefits yet a second time for people who are victims. And everybody needs to remember as well that we're talking about subsistence income that comes from unemployment compensation benefits. people who qualify for unemployment compensation benefits aren't taking off on a trip to Hawaii or buying a new Cadillac. They're paying rent. They're maybe paying a mortgage or part of it. They're buying groceries. They're making choices between medicine and milk and sugar and shoes. This is not munificence. This is subsistence. And now the aim here is to crush subsistence. And in crushing subsistence, by the way, I keep hearing all these Republican speeches about helping small business because small business is the backbone. Well, when we cut people's unemployment compensation benefits, we're cutting their capacity to pay for groceries, for electric bills, for telephone bills, for shoes, for pharmaceuticals, for all those things that create all those small business type jobs that I keep hearing about. That merely drags it all down one step further. And now, in the most cynical move of all, we have the reality that the people who are proposing to slash our benefits and restrict our eligibility are the people who are collecting a huge subsidy from the remaining portion of us who do have jobs because we are paying unemployment compensation taxes in this state on every single penny we earn, regardless of how much or how little we earn.
Sounds like a great gig if you can get it.
Well, it's a great gig for somebody, and we need to really pass the word about this injustice, this inequity, and this cynical plan that has been going on, not for a week or a year, but for decades, all aimed at victimizing the people who are already victims.
You know, Erwin, I have a lot of friends who own small businesses, and, you know, when you start talking about the things that the Chamber of Commerce have done, you know, they just simply don't believe it. They think of their Chamber of Commerce as, you know, the people who promote, you know, putting flowers in front of Main Street businesses and, you know, the local neighborhood groups.
Well, look, this week the Pennsylvania Chamber of Commerce, Chamber of Business and Industry, excuse me, I messed up that name. The Pennsylvania Chamber published, among other things, their plan for education. And one of the items, one of the planks on their plan to promote education in Pennsylvania, to enhance the quality of the classroom for our children, is to eliminate the applicability of the Pennsylvania prevailing wage law to school taxpayer-funded construction so that instead we can use tax dollars to fund a race to the bottom for construction workers and expose our children to buildings that are built, rebuilt, renovated, etc., to a group of workers who have not been properly trained, who have not been properly vetted, who have not been properly experienced, who don't have access to ongoing training, all of which comes from wholly private sources, not public money, private money, that training. But that's that great group of people who are out planting flowers in Town Square on Memorial Day.
You know, when I think about that, and I've had these conversations with numerous friends who talk about the prevailing wage rate on building projects, and they all buy into that logic that somehow we're going to be able to cut building costs by 30%.
Well, isn't that an intriguing kind of idea? To cut the cost of a building by 30% by cutting wages $2 an hour, that would mean that the labor cost on a construction project would have to be something in excess of 90% of the total cost, meaning that building materials and architectural plans and land acquisition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all together collectively add up to only 10% of the cost of a building project. Now, I'm not a statistician. I'm just a small-town lawyer, but even I can do that math.
Yeah, I was going to say, in some of the reports that I've read, states like Utah, who did away with their prevailing wage law, end up losing their not only losing their construction industry to transients, they also saw their costs skyrocket.
Well, we don't have to go all the way to Utah. We can go right here in Pennsylvania. When Tom Ridge was elected governor, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, under the direction of then Secretary of Labor and Industry Johnny Butler, who's now shockingly seen as a member of the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court, conducted an illegal survey of so-called prevailing wages. Ultimately, we got that survey dismissed by the former members of the Commonwealth Court before Judge Butler was a member because it was illegal both in its imposition and in its construct. But while that survey result was in effect in Pennsylvania, we found that the cost of school construction actually went up while the wages were driven down. And what that meant was the taxpayers were losing, and the money wasn't going into the hands of the workers who were doing the work. It was going into the pockets of the contractors, the very people who now tell us about overblown government spending and why we have to privatize everything.
But
that
isn't
didn't
that...
happen in Utah. That didn't happen in Texas. That didn't happen in Mississippi or Arkansas. Not even Florida. That happened right here, right in the heartland of central Pennsylvania.
But isn't that how the game is always played? We at the bottom always get the short end of the stick. You know, look at the economy. We didn't create this mess, but yet we're the ones being asked, tighten your belts, less unemployment, less medical, less of everything. Us, you know, pick up the shovel and do the digging, but we didn't cause the mess.
Well, you know, a couple things. First of all, to the people who are articulating those radical ideas, it may be a game because they don't have to play. But for the rest of us, it is anything but a game. It's real world. It's real families making real choices, not in the future, not a week from now, not a year from now, but today. And second, but most significantly, is it is fascinating to me to watch a bunch of well-to-do, comfortable people who are living through this mess without missing a beat suggest that the rest of us have to tighten our belts, that the rest of us have to suffer through cutbacks. And then we get the ultimate. Congressman-elect Harris from the state of Maryland,
yep,
who just yesterday announced to the world that he was shocked that his free taxpayer-financed health care as a congressman would not kick in immediately, but he would actually have to wait 30 days before he gets that health care for himself and his family, for which he contributes absolutely not one penny.
Yep. And his quote exactly was, "This is the only employer I've ever worked for where you don't get coverage the first day you are employed."
Well, you know, that shows just how out of touch this great voice of the people is, because I have represented workers for my entire career. I've negotiated thousands of contracts, and I cannot identify one, not one, affecting any of the probably million-plus workers that I've had the honor and privilege of representing that provides them with health care coverage on day one of their work.
I've never had a job that did that.
And that's even for those people who work in positions where when they qualify for health care coverage, they have to pay for it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, most of the jobs I've seen, it's either 30 days or 90 days.
Oh, 30 days or even 90 days in this world is grand.
If
I see them pretty regularly now with 90 days, 120 days, 180 days, or more, and they still are contributory. People have to pay for them. They don't get it for free. They don't get it as part of their compensation. They get it withdrawn from their compensation. But once again, it's all part of the grand plan. And our folks, your listeners, my friends and brothers and sisters need to be on guard because this is a freight train coming at it, and we either derail it by telling the truth or we get run down by it.
Let's go back to the unemployment thing for a second, because that's the really what I wanted to talk about. In looking at the coming months, where are we going to go? What are we going to see happening in the coming months?
Well, Governor-elect Ridge has announced no taxes, not no new taxes, but no taxes at all, no tax increases, because of the huge borrowing to the tune of the $3 billion plus that you have mentioned in this conversation. The Pennsylvania Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund must begin next year to pay back both the loan and pay interest on the loan that has been given to us by the federal government. If we don't do it through taxes and we don't increase the tax wage base, which is now instead of the 50% that it was in 86 or the 335% that it was in 1935 of the statewide average wage, but actually about 19% of the statewide average wage, then the only place that money can come from is through diminished benefits and restrictions on eligibility for workers. And that means that there is a huge tax increase for the people who can least afford it, the people who have lost their jobs because of what the Wall Street game players lost. And they didn't lose their money. They lost our money. They didn't lose their jobs. Yep. They lost our jobs. So the first thing that we need to be wary of, and it's going to start within days, I suspect, of the governor being sworn in, and maybe earlier with people like newly designated majority leader Mike Terzai of Allegheny County, to focus, for them to focus on this unemployment compensation situation and start to lay plans to cheat the victims of the unemployment situation of their capacity to keep body and soul together and provide some food for their family. So look out and get ready.
Balance into the budget on the backs of those who can't afford it. Can we take a quick call, Irwin?
Sure.
All right, we got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, pretty good. It's worse than he thinks because the only item that Governor-elect Corbett has said that he's willing to cut is state workers. So simultaneously, he's going to add thousands of people to the unemployment rolls to draw from the otherwise bankrupt unemployment system in Pennsylvania.
Well, caller Mike, you are absolutely right. I neglected to mention it, but you couldn't be more on beam. And that is precisely part of the problem. And watch out. There's a provision in the unemployment compensation law that says people who are policymakers in the public sector are not entitled to unemployment compensation eligibility. So watch these people when they come into office and start this game of slash and burn on public employees and trying to balance the budget on the backs, particularly of public employees. Trying to claim that somebody who answers the telephone somehow is a policymaker and therefore ineligible for unemployment compensation.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how they reconcile that with the fact that they have been taking unemployment contribution from those people. Because one would say, well, if I'm ineligible, then you wrongly took the last 20 years of unemployment and give it back.
Well, it's intriguing, and I'm listening not only to the ideas you express, Mike, but also the work base at this point. And we cannot permit anybody to take that away from us.
Excellent point, Irwin. You got another question, Mike? You got about 30 seconds.
Okay. One of the things I was going to say is it's very different this time is, though, is that this governor doesn't have time to act. The day he takes office, he's bankrupt. I was also going to say that the legislator from Maryland, who is the doctor, has made himself a place in history right next to George Bush number one when he went to the grocers convention and they showed him a laser checkout.
Yep.
He said, these things are great. You ought to put them in the stores. They've been in stores for over 5 years. That's how detached he was from reality.
Excellent point, Mike.
Well said, Mike.
I appreciate the call. But yeah, I think the guy in Maryland, he has put himself down in the annals of history.
You know, every now and again, if we just let him go, they will tell us all about who they really are.
Yep, give him enough rope.
And this guy is doing it. This is the voice and the face of the Tea Party. This is also a guy who is an obstetrical anesthesiologist. And one has to be curious about how much he made and how much he has historically made from Medicare and Medicaid patients who had the utilization of his services, probably never even seeing or hearing from him because they were asleep by then. But these are precisely the dollars now that he advocates cutting while he's saying that he doesn't understand why those very recipients of those benefits aren't paying for him to have health care before he's even sworn in.
Kind of makes you wonder. Kind of makes you
wonder. Doesn't make me wonder. It confirms my most cynical beliefs.
So let's take to those cynical beliefs. So here in the coming months, what should we be doing? I'm going to wrap this up in a minute. What should we be doing? What should I be doing? What should the listeners be doing to fend off some of these, what I'm saying are just some of the most horrible attacks I see coming?
We need to be, number one, not bashful about talking to one another.
people to people, person to person, worker to worker, to tell the story. We know the truth. And while we cannot outspend the other side on their advertising, we see each other at work. We see each other around the dinner table. We see each other at school. We see each other at church. We see each other at the high school basketball games, etc. And we need to be telling one another what we know and working as a community to recognize that all of these people who we're talking about work for us. We don't work for them. They're our employees. And if they will not or refuse to face the truth, we're going to hold a mirror up in front of them every day in every way. So that's number one. Number two is we need to use forums like your show to explain to people what's going on so that they have access to the facts and access to the truth. Number three, we got to stop being bashful. There's going to be a day and a time when we have to assemble in Harrisburg, and because there are more of us than there are of them, we have to get our message out by knocking on doors of members of the General Assembly in their offices in that gilded palace in which they live from day to day, and also in their home offices in their home districts with not merely letters, but phone calls, with emails, with text messages, with personal visits. And if that means standing at the bus stop while their kids are going to school and asking with signs and placards and leaflets why their daddy wants to take away my unemployment compensation benefits, so be it.
And there are the marching orders. We've got to get to it. And there's no time to waste.
None whatsoever.
Irwin, I appreciate your time. Always great conversation. Thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it as well. And great song leading me in. I like that.
Right. Thank you so much, Irwin. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Every time some dim-witted bozo tries to pull off a screwy terrorist attack against us, the knee-jerk reaction of our authorities is to secure our liberties by putting more restrictions on our liberties. One goofball guy on a plane, for example, tried to ignite his shoe in 2001. His effort fizzled. But since then, every American who travels on an airplane, some 100 million of us each year, must bow to Al-Qaeda by bending over to remove our shoes before shuffling through a security system that assumes all Americans are terrorists. Then came the incompetent who tried, but failed, to detonate his underwear. In response, our government is spending billions of our tax dollars to put pricey and invasive super X-ray machines in America's airports. How invasive? The machines peer right through our clothing, exposing everyone's privates to screeners, who assume that all of us have bombs in our undies. What Al-Qaeda has learned is that they do not even have to succeed. Just by sending some hapless, low-level bunglers on a harebrained mission, they know that our officials will obligingly withdraw yet another freedom from the American people. Worse, they've altered our society's historic culture of liberty by prompting U.S. officials to impose an Orwellian ethic of fear, suspicion, and repression. We now live, for example, under a McCarthy-esque law called the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. This ludicrous, un-American waste of tax dollars includes electronic signs on our highways urging us to spy on each other and report even the most innocent activities to police authorities. Likewise, airport PA systems now ceaselessly boom out authoritarian messages asserting sternly that security is everyone's business. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me, but no. In America, liberty is everyone's business.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Fire, last time I was laid off. It was 1991. George H.W. Bush was in the White House, and they passed an extension, and I needed every second of it. Because, look, things were tough. And at no point in any recession have we not passed extensions. That has not happened. This would be the first time. This would be the very first time with unemployment so high. And, you know, the right screaming, oh, unemployment's so high. But we don't want to do anything to help those people. And one of the questions that I asked a couple of weeks ago, as I said, but by letting those people fall off, letting them fall off the unemployment rolls, aren't you actually lowering the unemployment rate? So couldn't the Republicans claim victory? We kicked all those people back. You made them go get jobs. Lowering the unemployment rate. 2 million people. 2 million people. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot in a country of 310 million. But if you're one of those folks, it means the world. And I got to tell you, I remember those days of being laid off, and it was not fun. I wasn't sitting by the, you know, having parties and all that wasn't happening. And I'd be interested in your stories. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Because when I was laid off, Jake, and I remember this, it's all I could do to pay the bills. And I was a single guy at the time. I had a great job that I had just lost because of the recession. And things were tough.
I've been there. And you're exactly right. Even when you're single, you're basically floating. You're just paying your bills and that's it. I mean, you're as far as economically, your life basically stops. You certainly can't put any away. You're not buying anything excessive. You're just, what it is, it's a stopgap is exactly what it was intended to do. And that's about it.
Yeah, I paid my rent. I paid my bills. You know, maybe a little bit something else. Generally, used to go to happy hours. I'd buy one drink and because they used to have like all you could eat wings and stuff. Back when wings were throwaway items. They were.
I know.
They were throwaway. Free wings if you'd come and drink at our bar. So you buy a beer and you sit.
So that's why to this day this is one of your favorite foods.
Absolutely. Wings. Oh, I love wings. So the hotter the better.
Oh, you are a unique man. You know, wow. That's not my choice. But
give me those.
Like,
give me the ones
like
where
wings.
If you're sniffing them at the bar, your eyes are watering.
Oh, I run away from them. I've had them once or twice. Some of my friends played a trick on me, and I. Let's just put it to you this way, Rick. I had side effects for a couple days.
Yeah, well, you know,
if you get my drift,
the tunnel gets a little warm.
but seriously, this is a serious
ring of fire.
I'll fail it. I mean, we're laughing, but really, this subject, unemployment, is a serious subject. You talked about it. Aaron Aronson did a good job. I don't think people quite understand the total package. It does, sure, it provides basic sustenance for those who are employed, but it also it has a multiplier to it. It also keeps people in the community working. Let me give you some numbers here. There's a department in a report, which is exactly what we're talking about, a U.S. Department of Labor. It showed unemployment program and how much of a positive impact on our total economy it had. We talked about this before. For every dollar spent on unemployment compensation, it increased the activity by $2. In other words, it had a 100% multiplier. During each quarter of the recent recession, unemployment benefits kept an average of 1.6 million Americans on the job. At the height of the recession, unemployment benefits averted about 1.8 million job losses and kept the unemployment rate approximately 1.2% percentage points lower, which is a large number. Unemployment benefits reduced the fall in GDP by 18%. Nominal GDP was about $175 billion higher in 2009 than it would have been without unemployment benefits. In total, unemployment insurance kept GDP about $315 billion higher from the start of the recession through the second quarter of 2010. Now, GDP means the total number of goods and services, which means that it had a huge impact on keeping the economy running along at a reasonable level. It would have been much worse, not only for the people who were unemployed, but for businesses within the locale and also on a national level. And I don't think the average person really understands that. It is, in essence, It's an economic stimulus, yes. It's not as much as a stimulus as we like, but it is an economic stimulus, not to mention the fact that we owe those workers. Those workers paid money into the unemployment compensation fund, and they deserve that money.
I don't know that I would use deserve it. That's their insurance.
That's what it's there for.
That's what
it's
there
for.
It's
to be used.
And it's a safety net to save the entire economy. Because those folks do go to local businesses. They do go to the local store. And they do spend every penny of that keeping other people employed. And what I think is interesting is, we're talking about 10% of the population who are unemployed right now. The other 90% are employed. You know, for right now, if we stop this, and this is later on we'll talk with Melissa Boteach from the Center for American Progress about this, but, you know, one of the things that I find interesting is, you know, folks look at somebody who's unemployed and say, well, you know, their job's out there. There are five people applying for every one job. And what's interesting to me is we're talking about handing out $700 billion to the top 2% in this country while talking about slashing benefits for 2 million people. It doesn't make any sense. The calculus just doesn't add up. What kind of a society are we when we're willing to kick somebody pretty much out into the curb and enrich the people who are already wildly wealthy?
Well, a couple points. You talked about when you say one in five, you, in other words, you have five people applying for each job in the country. That's an average. But if you look at the areas that are really desperate, that figure can easily double and even triple. And I submit to you, Rick, and you know this is true, when they're good-paying jobs, I'm talking about $20, $25-an-hour jobs with good-paying benefits, you literally have hundreds of people applying. In fact, I was told by a friend. I work with this woman in the recent campaign, and she had a good friend who got a job out at the track. And one of the supervisors came up to this woman and said, "Do you realize how lucky you are? Do you realize how lucky you are, Rick?" They literally had applications from all over the country, thousands of them. And I believe the number is about 100, I believe, those jobs out there. Now, they were good-paying jobs. They were excellent jobs. My point is, they say one in five. When you're talking about the good-paying jobs, it's a lot more than one in five apply for each and every job. It is tough out there. Jobs that pay $20, $25 an hour with benefits are very, very rare today.
Yep. Which is why we've really now got to get out there and push this.
And by the way, these lawmakers, they have to act by November 30th. That gives us 13 days. That's not a lot of time. Contact your congressmen, your senators, and implore them. We need this. We need this. Millions of people. 2 million people that are going to lose their unemployment benefits, not to mention the jobs that are going to be lost because we don't have that impetus to the economy.
In Forbes today on their website, and remember, Forbes is the home for the world's business leaders. That's, you know, that's their moniker there. There was an article written by Ashley Ebling titled "Small Business Owners Say Tax the Rich." And the article says extending the Bush tax cuts for high earners would spell gloom and doom, according to a group of small business owners and leaders assembled by Jeff Markley and an outfit called the Business for Shared Prosperity. Margot Dorfman, chief executive officer of the U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce, said the high-end Bush tax cuts are contributing to our financial ruin rather than our economic success. They should expire as scheduled on December 31st. We don't need more tax cuts at the top. We need more consumer spending at the middle. Jim Hauser, owner of Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Portland, Oregon, and co-chair of the Oregon Small Business Council, said tax cuts for the wealthiest should be reserved for periods of budget surplus and full employment. And look, you know, I'm not against tax cuts for anybody when we can afford them. You're talking about $700 billion just handing away at a time when you're, A, talking about kicking people off of unemployment, and, B, you got Republicans running around saying we want to shut down the government. Doesn't make a lot of sense. You got people who say, well, we can't raise the debt ceiling, which we'll talk about later, and they're willing to shut the government down. Why? So we can have these tax cuts. Frank Kapp, chief executive officer of the South Carolina Small Business Chamber of Commerce, said, quote, letting the Bush tax cuts expire for the wealthiest is the right thing to do, the responsible thing to do. And in the next segment, we're going to talk to Michael Tehan. He's vice president of Espresso Parts Sources. EspressoResources.com is their website. He's from this group, Business for Shared Prosperity. Going to talk about this whole concept, this Republican blind faith, this ideology, this theology that they have, that if we cut taxes, small businesses are going to hire like crazy. Because what I've been saying, now that the Republicans do control everything here in the state of Pennsylvania, we should be at full employment within 6 months. Should be at full employment. Because now the employers feel emboldened. They feel relieved. There's no more worry about those evil tax and spenders. So they should be spending those mountains of cash that we've been giving them. I mean, think about how sick this system is. We bailed these banks out, gave them all of this money in the hopes that they would lend it back to us. Think about that for a second. It's mind-blowing. Just mind-blowing. But when we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Tehan, again, vice president of Espresso Parts Sources. We're back right after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO will continue to aggressively pursue a working family agenda as the new Republican majority takes power in the U.S. House. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says creating jobs and a solid economic recovery are top priorities.
Working Americans will not rest until good jobs are created and the people responsible for destroying the jobs are held accountable. The AFL-CIO continue to mobilize every day to create jobs and demand that Republicans and Democrats step up to the plate.
Trumka says voters want both political parties to work together, but that doesn't mean compromises that continue to favor the corporate and wealthy elite.
People think that Washington is broken, and leadership on both sides of the aisle needs to step up and work together. But that doesn't mean compromising just for the sake of it or caving in to what's best for corporations and the wealthy. It means working together to create jobs and help working families.
The end is near for many jobless workers depending on their benefits. Jesse Russell reports.
At the end of this month, 73 weeks of extended unemployment benefits provided by the federal government will expire if not reauthorized by Congress. If the extension isn't reauthorized, it could see 2 million long-term unemployed falling off the dole and no longer receiving checks. The number of unemployed beyond the 99-week mark is unknown because the government doesn't keep data on those individuals. On Friday in New York City, a group of protesters who have taken on the moniker 99ers because they have surpassed the extended 99 weeks called on Congress to add an additional 20 weeks of benefits.
National Nurses United has scored an organizing win in the Orlando, Florida area. 550 RNs will now be represented by the union after an overwhelming vote by nurses at Osceola Regional Medical Center. It's the first of several union elections to be held in coming weeks at Hospital Corporation of America Hospitals in Florida. National Nurses United says the vote is a dramatic step forward for the National Nurses Organizing Committee in Florida. Years of pressure on companies using tomatoes from Florida Tomato Growers Exchange has finally borne fruit for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Florida Tomato Growers has signed an agreement that will provide tomato pickers one penny more for every pound of tomatoes picked. The deal will also improve working conditions for the workers and allows the coalition to provide training for workers in the field. The campaign started with the coalition putting pressure on Yum brands, which owns brands like Taco Bell and KFC. Once Yum signed on to a pledge to pay workers more per pound, the workers targeted other fast food companies like McDonald's. The agreement with the exchange is historic because even with the buyers agreeing to the higher wage, the growers were reluctant to give in. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's time for change. It's time to rearrange. Time to rearrange. Time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show. You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
I really don't get it. You know, we're talking about kicking people off unemployment, 2 million people at the end of the month. Yet, we're hell-bent on giving away $700 billion to the top 2%. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, especially our friends at Business for Shared Prosperity. Their website, businessforsharedprosperity.org. They've got a petition going on right now, and I suggest everybody get to the website, sign up for the petition at businessforsharedprosperity.org. We'll get a link up at our site at therickssmithshow.com so you can sign that petition to tell Congress no more with this, no more. And we should also be telling them, pass those extensions. I've got Michael Tehan. He's the vice president of Espresso Parts Sources, their website, EspressoResource.com. I got him on the line as a representative of Business for Shared Prosperity. Michael, welcome to the program.
Very good to be here.
I appreciate your time. You know, I'm looking at this, the top 2% taking another $700 billion at a time when we're talking about cutting people off unemployment doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. In fact, it doesn't make any good business sense. Not extending the tax cuts for the people that are making that much money, you know, we're advocating that, and I'm in that group. It's not an altruistic thing. It's not because we want to feel good about ourselves. It's because it makes good business sense to do that. We talk about making investments in equipment or investments in our business, but we're not willing to make investments in the people that drive our business, which is our customers.
You know, you wrote something in a piece that I read earlier today that really I think is going to get you thrown out of the club. You said, first and most importantly, the profit motive is overrated.
Right.
I think that's going to get you thrown out of the club.
That's true. Well, I don't know about that. Any good business person doesn't do it just for the money. We're in a business park here. There are probably 20 businesses. I don't think anybody here is in that group that makes $250,000 or more. And they're not doing it just because it's about the money. You do it because you love it. You do it because it's your passion. You do it because of the independence. There are hundreds of reasons that you're self-employed, that you do it for yourself. Almost everyone in my family has been an independent business person. It's kind of in my genes. And it's not just about the money. And if that's your only motivation, then you might as well be on Wall Street because you're not really creating anything. You're not doing anything of value.
That's an excellent point. You know, I, and also in looking at your piece, you talked about the tax cuts not going to help small businesses. Explain, you know, because that's all we keep hearing. All I keep hearing, especially from the folks here in Harrisburg, you know, we got to give businesses tax cuts because if they have these tax cuts, they're gonna automatically create jobs because if they have all this wealth, it'll then trickle down on us in rivers of yellow something or other.
Tax cuts never created jobs. And the example that I used to give was my father had a transmission business, and for 20, 30 years he was, you know, just struggling to make ends meet. He was making payroll. If the government stepped in and gave him a $5,000 check, and here's a $5,000 check in the form of a tax cut, go out and do whatever you want, because that's basically what a tax cut is. He would go to Vegas. You know, he would go do something else not related to his business, because the only thing that would signal to him that he had to hire a new guy or buy a new piece of equipment is if he had more customers coming in the front door.
Yep.
Because everything is about
demand.
You know, supply and demand and incentives. And if he doesn't have $5,000 coming in the front door, he's not going to invest in his business to make it grow because it's not there to begin with.
Right. And that's one of the things I said that right from the very beginning with the Recovery Act. 40% of the money that went out in the Recovery Act was in the form of tax cuts. And I said that was a bad idea. We should have been stimulating demand. There's so many things that we need to invest in this country. If we through our government, would have invested in roads and bridges and solar panels and the such, you would have created that demand for business that you didn't have to then give away.
That's true. My business depends upon people walking in the front door of a coffee house and buying a cappuccino every day. Fundamentally, that's what my business is about. Because I don't sell coffee, but I sell the parts to the repair guy that fixes the machine that's owned by the coffee shop that serves that cup of coffee. And if people don't come in the door and buy that cup of coffee, I don't sell parts.
Right.
So everything comes down to that $3 a day that that one person does. I mean, somebody who's getting a $1 million bonus on Wall Street isn't going to buy any more coffee. He's still going to buy that one cappuccino a day. But you take that $1 million and you distribute it amongst the middle class in this country, my business improves. That's my bottom line.
And that's the message that has not been told enough.
Right.
That, you know, we have this idea that, well, if you give the very wealthy even more, they're going to consume even more. And as you pointed out, you can only consume so much.
Right. I mean, the economic principle is the marginal propensity to consume. I mean, you can't, there's only so many, you know, cups of coffee you can buy. There's only so many cars you can buy. I mean, it runs out. But when you give it to the middle class and you people that are actually, you know, working and making a living, they spend all of it. And the truth of the matter is that at the top of the food chain, they're going to get the money anyway.
Right.
You know, people will consume, they'll buy, they'll, you know, the money flows up and multiplies on the way.
You say in one of the pieces that there's talk of a class war. Do you believe that?
I don't know that there's talk of a class war. I think the dialogue needs to change. I think that the people that are advocating for these tax cuts for the really wealthy in this country are trying to paint it as a class war. But what I think what I was saying is that you have permission to say it's okay to tax the rich, that there's actually an economic principle involved that benefits the economy. It's not just about, you know, sticking it to them, so to speak. It just makes good economic sense.
Well, it makes sense that to be honest, the wealthy use more of the wearers of society, the commons, if you will.
Right.
They should be asked to contribute a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely, they should. And it's not even just about moving into the using more of the commons, because clearly they do. But you know, this country was founded upon a principle of a progressive tax system, that those who get more benefit and derive more wealth from this system that we have owe a little bit back to the country that gave it to them. And there's not a problem with that. It's what made this country great. It's what made this country successful. And it's a principle, no matter how it's been tried to be, no matter how it's been painted lately, that is the foundation of this country. And it should go on. It's like you have permission to have a progressive tax system because it's good for everybody, and it's good for the rich, it's good for the poor, it's good for the middle class, it's good for everybody.
I agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Michael Tehan, Vice President of Espresso Parts Source, their website, EspressoResources.com. You know, Mike, with all this political rhetoric that's going on, I do worry about the small business people. I do worry about that. But, you know, part of me, what is a small business? And I've been asking my small business friends to give me kind of a definition. What is your definition of a small business?
Well, I suppose the technical definition that the government wants to say is something on the order of fewer than 500 people. But when I think of small business, I think of everyone that I grew up with. My family and the friends of my family, they were all small business owners. They had restaurants, they had cafes. I've had restaurants and cafes. They had automotive repair shops. They had typically I had 17 employees at one point. It's not these, you know, large manufacturing things. When you drive down the street, you see storefronts. All of those storefronts are small businesses, and they're not big manufacturing enterprises. So in my experience, when I see small business and when I look around and see small business, that's what I see. People struggling to make ends meet, but people also following their passion. And that's small business. And very few of them make, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 a year. So this myth that if you tax the people that make more than $250,000 a year, that business will suffer. There isn't a business person that I grew up with or knew, and I knew a lot of them, that made that kind of money. And they created jobs, and they created wealth, and they provided, you know, a good living for the people that work for them.
So how do we help those people? Because, you know, I don't necessarily want to help the hedge fund managers. I don't necessarily want to help the Halliburtons of the world. I want to help people like you and people like me, small business people who are trying to make ends meet.
Well, the first thing that we can do is certainly let the top-tier tax bracket, we can let those tax cuts expire because they don't need them. I think that we should probably have another rate altogether for those that are making $1 million plus and really stick it to them, because if you make the money that these people put in their pocket more expensive than the money that they invest in their own companies, then they will invest in their own companies.
So would you advocate going back to a a good socialist president's tax code, something like the great socialist Dwight David Eisenhower?
Well, at least the great socialist Bill Clinton, and certainly, I mean, there were so many loopholes under Eisenhower, I don't think that's practical, but I think that we can certainly add a couple more tiers to the progressive tax system that we have.
Right, but the loopholes back then, you actually had people putting money into charitable things, building schools and hospitals and the such.
That's true, to get, you know, so that they would, you know, lower their income.
Right.
But, you know, and the thing is, that system still produced a great deal of wealth. You know, we had no shortage of multimillionaires at that point, and I don't think anybody was complaining.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. In fact, what we saw was a growing, a very large middle class.
Yeah, we did. And the middle class is what supports that whole system. You know, the upper class doesn't support anything.
Well, they take from the middle class. That's their
right.
job.
Well, yeah. And the truth is, in my family, because I have a wife that works, you know, we will be directly affected by this, you know, hopeful tax increase on that top tier. But from a business standpoint, I know that it's going to benefit my business to do that. You know, it's fiscally responsible to let them expire, and it's good for my business to do that as well.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you for a second, and I'm not even sure where your position would fall on this, but I do survey all of my small business friends on health care with the bill that was just passed. Is that going to help you or hurt you? Are you for it, against it? Curious.
It's not going to help me directly, only because I'm on a health plan that my wife has. Yet my business partner has an independent health plan, and he pays a lot of money for it. And about the only thing that we do agree on is that he felt that single payer was really the best way to go.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, because one of the things that I've been saying is I think small business people, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, they got into doing what they're doing because they love what they're doing.
Right.
They don't want to be health insurance agents.
That's right. When I had my restaurant and I had 17 employees, I was not able to provide health insurance for them. I mean, the restaurant business is always very difficult, and you have very tight margins. But it's one of the things that I thought about doing that I would like to be able to do. I couldn't afford to do that, but it's another thing that I shouldn't have had to do. We think of like the fire department or the police department as providing something for the common good. You know, if your house burns down, you just know the fire department's going to come out and take care of it. Unless you live in Tennessee, which is a whole other thing. But, you know, healthcare should be the same way. You know, if I didn't have to worry about, you know, my copay, my insurance, my limits or anything like that, as a business owner, I could do what I do best, which is focus on my business, find new customers, find better ways to do business and serve them, and make money.
Yep. Because what I've been saying since this whole debate began, you want to see the entrepreneurial spirit explode in this country, allow people to have health security and to follow their passions.
Right. Let me do my job, which is to make money and build my business. Don't make me do all this other stuff.
So last question I've got for you, what should people be doing to make sure we get small businesses the help that they need? What would you suggest?
Besides buy more coffee?
Yeah.
We need to understand really what small business is, and the people that occupy all those small storefronts, that's who we're talking about. And we need to be able to communicate that to the people that we voted for just recently. And you need to tell them, look, you know, we want to benefit small business, but the small business that I'm talking about is the people that are actually working every day, not the people that are putting on a suit and tie and walking into a big office somewhere and just moving money around, but people that are actually creating and doing that. And that's the people that are under that $250,000 figure. They need the help that they can get to grow. Like I said, nobody here that, you know, you can extend the radius from my office to a half a mile, and the people that are in that tax bracket that the Republican Party is saying that we need to help the most, there's perhaps three or four of them here, you know, in a half-mile radius from this business park. That's not where the jobs are being created, and we need to communicate that. Let that top-tier tax bracket expire. If anything else, create a whole nother one. That's what businesses need. We need to put money in the pockets of the people that spend every day.
I'm right there with you. Again, go to the website, businessforsharedprosperity.org. Sign up for their petition. Have your voice heard. Again, we're going to put a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Michael, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number if you want to join in. Or you can check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. We talked about Andy Harris, the Republican from Maryland, who really now I think is going to go down in the annals of history as one of the most boneheaded comments ever. Like Mike said earlier on, just like HW, boy, you should put those scanners everywhere after they've been in the supermarket for 4 or 5 years. I can understand HW being that out of touch. Got to remember, he was vice president for 8 years. You got to remember, you know, they don't have access like normal folks do, like a doctor would. This guy is no Secret Service bound person. I'm sure he's lived regular life, only on a different level. Which is kind of funny because yesterday, Representative Joe Crowley, Democrat from New York, he began circulating a letter among Democrats to call on people like Harris. Call on all these people who ran on the repeal Obamacare. We don't want any federal government. We don't want no federal government. We don't need no stinking government health care. So all of you people who ran on that, sign off on it. We, the taxpayers, shouldn't have to pay for it. Say, you know what? No thank you. No thank you. We don't want it. In fact, we're so in love with the for-profit system, we will take it and pay for it out of our own pocket. So he sent this letter to John Boehner, who is now the Speaker of the House, and also to Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And he writes, if your conference wants to deny millions of Americans affordable health care, your members should walk that walk. He writes this to them. If you cannot enroll in the very kind of coverage that you want for yourself and then turn around and deny it to the American people who don't happen to be members of Congress. Also note that they pay almost $11,000 for the member, for any, for a member of Congress. Almost $11,000. So I think it's a good idea. You know, if you were against it, you should be against it.
No, I think it's a great idea, Rick, and I'll tell you why. The Democrats, I think they've got their head handed to them by the Republicans. I think they need to stand up and show clearly, which they didn't do. Show the American people clearly the approaches of the Republicans and the Democrats. And I can tell you this, when you start, which I have, when you start talking health care to people, a good percentage of them say, well, you know what? I want the health care that they have in D.C. They will tell you that up front. That's the kind of thing that the Democrats need to do. They need to say to the American people, see, this is why we need health care. Now, the Republicans are telling you you don't need it, but yet they're asking you as a taxpayer to pay for their health care. What's wrong with that?
And this is nothing, though. Look, you know, conservative members of Congress, you know, taking taxpayer-subsidized health care while saying that you can't have it, nothing new there. Because you may remember, the guy I really like, Anthony Weiner from New York, he identified 55 Republicans who were enrolled in Medicare. They were enrolled in Medicare, 55 of them. Now, let me remind you, Medicare is a single-payer universal health care system. Single-payer. Yet none of these Republicans who, none of these 55 who were all in favor of getting the Medicare for themselves, oh, they were happy to take it for themselves. Oh, boy, just give me that health care. But you can't have it. Not one. Not one of them. Until yesterday. One Republican has taken up Crowley's challenge. Bobby Schilling, Republican from Illinois, the guy who beat our good friend Phil Hare. He told ABC's Top Line that he's not going to take the benefits because basically his family's got it. So my question is, and this is going to be an interesting one, and I want to follow up on this because if his wife has health care and he goes on to her policy, I want to see if his wife's health care would do like my health care does. Because every year, and I've got very good health insurance, every year my health insurance company sends me a letter for my wife to fill out saying that she's not employed and that she's not getting health insurance from anywhere else, and that if she is employed, are they offering health care and is she not taking advantage of it? Because if she's not taking advantage of it, they don't cover her. So I'm really, really interested in this, because if he's doing that, he's cheating the system. And, you know, a good conservative, right-wing Republican can never cheat the system, except, you know, when you're those 55 who enrolled in Medicare but denied everybody else the same thing that you had. Health insurance companies gave $86.2 million to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce last year. $86.2 million. And we wonder why we didn't get what we wanted. We wonder why we didn't have the ability to pass what Congress has for themselves, for the rest of us. Companies like United Health Group, Cigna, funneled money into the Chamber of Commerce's anti-health reform campaign as soon as we began talking about it. $86.2 million for advertising, for polling, for all those crazy events that you saw, all that feigned outrage, all of that, all of those marketing ploys. You don't think that just came out of nowhere? It wasn't spontaneous. No, well planned. This entire attack on healthcare reform has been well funded and well planned. Why? Because there's a lot of money here. There's a lot of money here to be stolen from the American people. And you look at what they did, and they're masters. You know, like we talked about earlier with Irwin Aronson, the Chamber of Commerce, they are master manipulators. They set out a plan 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road, and they execute with precision. Why? Because they've got the funding to do it. $86 million. And is that a good investment if you're the health insurance industry? You bet your sweet behind it is. Just like here in the state of Pennsylvania, you know, was the anywhere from $1 to $3 million that Tom Corbett took from the natural gas industry, from the drillers Was that a good investment for them? You bet your behind it was. I wish I could get that kind of return on investment. This year alone, they're going to save $70 million because the Senate Republicans would not pass a reasonable extraction tax. But yet we're the ones who get to pick up the mess because we're so easily blinded. I mean, you look at some of those ads, Jake, and you just go, what are you thinking? Why would people listen to this drivel? But they did. Their head was full of it constantly.
Well, you know, it seems to be a religion in the Republican Senate especially. I mean, we're the only state that doesn't tax, I believe, smokeless tobacco, and we're one of only two states that doesn't tax cigars. Now, you take both of them, and to me, that gets into the health care thing. It's just unconscionable.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You've got something on this. I'd love to hear it because, you know, this health care debate, it's going to heat up in the coming months because the T-Twizzlers, and it better be H.R. 1. It better be the first thing that the Republican House does on January 3rd. Just like when Obama took office, H.R. 1 was to get equal pay for women. This one had better be their pledge, and their pledge is to repeal health care. So it had better be that. And we have got to get ready for this fight again. Because, look, they didn't want it. Like every step forward, like every bit of social progress, Republicans stood in stark opposition. They didn't want Social Security. They didn't want Medicare. They didn't want unemployment insurance. They didn't want minimum wage. They didn't want any of that. And they don't want this. And they are going to spend billions of dollars convincing us that we don't need it. This unemployment compensation debate, there should be no debate here. This should be decided. If we're this grand Christian nation that we claim to be, do we not help the least among us? It's amazing stuff.
No, again, for the 100th time, this isn't welfare. This is a program that the workers paid into. And again, because of no fault of their own, because of the stupidity, and I'm going to say it, because of the arrogance and stupidity of those who had control of the state government, we now have a huge deficit.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me the other day, well, they wanted to be unemployed. I said, if they wanted to be unemployed, you doofus, they wouldn't get unemployment insurance. The only way you collect unemployment benefits is if you were laid off through no fault of your own. If you were fired, you ain't getting it. The only way you do is when the employer says, sorry, there's the door, goodbye. Thanks for your years of service. There's the door. Goodbye.
But the Republicans like the public to believe, again, that this is just, you know, they're sucking off your tax dollars. No. No. The money that was set aside from each of those unemployed workers came from their checks.
Amazing stuff. Let's take a quick break. We're right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Every time some dim-witted bozo tries to pull off a screwy terrorist attack against us, the knee-jerk reaction of our authorities is to secure our liberties by putting more restrictions on our liberties. One goofball guy on a plane, for example, tried to ignite his shoe in 2001. His effort fizzled, but since then, every American who travels on an airplane, some 100 million of us each year, must bow to Al-Qaeda by bending over to remove our shoes before shuffling through a security system that assumes all Americans are terrorists. Then came the incompetent who tried, but failed, to detonate his underwear. In response, our government is spending billions of our tax dollars to put pricey and invasive super X-ray machines in America's airports. How invasive? The machines peer right through our clothing, exposing everyone's privates to screeners, who assume that all of us have bombs in our undies. What Al-Qaeda has learned is that they do not even have to succeed to succeed. Just by sending some hapless, low-level bunglers on a harebrained mission, they know that our officials will obligingly withdraw yet another freedom from the American people. Worse, they've altered our society's historic culture of liberty by prompting U.S. officials to impose an Orwellian ethic of fear, suspicion, and repression. We now live, for example, under a McCarthy-esque law called the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. This ludicrous, un-American waste of tax dollars includes electronic signs on our highways urging us to spy on each other and report even the most innocent activities to police authorities. Likewise, airport PA systems now ceaselessly boom out authoritarian messages asserting sternly that security is everyone's business. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me, but no. In America, liberty is everyone's business.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
That's what the bankers would do. That's what the bankers would do if you let them. AP story caught my attention, and it's something that's I can't use the language that that's pouring through my head right now, but it's about time. AP story: the federal government has opened criminal investigations into approximately 50 executives and directors of U.S. banks that have collapsed during the financial crisis. Deputy Inspector General Fred Gibson said Wednesday the Inspector General's office at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, has been probing the role of executives in bank failures around the country. The criminal investigations are separate from the civil lawsuits approved by the FDIC's board against some 80 bank executives, employees, and directors. The FDIC is seeking to recoup about $2 billion in bank losses that the regulators say were the result of negligence or misconduct by executives or directors. Hold on a second. $2 billion? Didn't we throw some $350 billion at them? I seem to remember that. The FDIC has shut down or seized 311 banks since January of 2008 at a cost of around $77 billion. The criminal probes were reported earlier this week by the Wall Street Journal. And I'm going, you know, we're trying to recoup $2 billion when you're right there saying it's cost us $77 billion. It takes me back to that story we talked about earlier in the week with this, where the Morgan Stanley investment guy ran somebody on his bike over, causing spinal injuries and brain injuries, and then just drove off. And the prosecutor said, well, you know, that's just a misdemeanor. When if it were you or me, or if I did that, you bet I'd be on the front page of the newspaper. I'd have those pretty silver bracelets that they give out when they take people off to the padded room there, to the room with the bars and the gray paint. That's where they'd be taking me. This guy, big Wall Street executive. No, no, no.
This is an interesting question since you brought up the case. Who would have jurisdiction in that case if there was an inkling of conflict of interest? Would that be the Attorney General? Well, or would you have to go to the U.S. Attorney?
Well, it'd be the state's Attorney General first, and then I guess the U.S. Attorney. It's a state case, so I would assume it would have to be the state hierarchy. And from some of the research I've done, there appears to be no conflict. The prosecutor purely went on the premise that this guy's going to have to continue to work to pay the bills of the doctor. And I would say that that's a wrong-headed decision, and it's much like this banking thing. We allow these guys to rob, steal, pillage, do whatever they want, and then the penalties they get is, don't do it again. A little slap on the wrist, don't do it again.
We still have the attitude in our society that somehow white collar crime isn't as bad. Well, you know what?
It's worse.
If you're stealing, you're stealing. The difference is when you're dealing with white collar crime, it's usually a lot more money involved normally. You're usually talking millions and sometimes billions.
Well, look at Bush's brother with the Silverado savings and loan.
Oh, my. It's going back in the 80s. That's wow.
I mean, did he get thrown in jail? What did he get? Nothing. He walked away with a big fat paycheck. You and I, we got stuck cleaning up the mess again. And it's about time. It is absolutely about time that we look at some of these banksters and put them where they belong. And look, the penalties aren't. They're going to be nowhere near enough. And I had read just recently that during the savings and loan collapse, which is nowhere, you can't even begin to compare it to what we're talking about with the Bush recession. There's no comparison whatsoever. That 1,000 people were convicted of crimes across the country. 1,000 people convicted of
crimes.
And
there were some big heavy hitters. You remember Mr. Keating?
Yep. The Keating Five. There hasn't been one person convicted. I mean, you could make the argument that in Mr. Ponzi's game, he was one of them, but he wasn't the one that caused the collapse. You know, where's the Goldman Sachs? Where's the Lehman Brothers? Where are all those people who did that, who were involved in that? Why aren't we prosecuting them? Actually, what we've done is we've drawn them in and said, well, how can we fix it? And oh, by the way, here are some bonuses. Sure doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So them, we were more than happy to say, go ahead, take the cake. You can have Kate and Edith too. Yet you and I, if we have a bill, there is no place to hide. It's like I've said about healthcare. You know, we've said that I've had people tell me, well, we have universal healthcare in this country. If you get sick, you can go to the doctor. And if you fall out of a tree and break both your knees, you go to the doctor and they fix it. That's true. If you don't have health insurance and you go to the doctor, they will fix it. They're going to charge you for it. And if you don't pay it, they will hound you for the rest of your life. They'll ruin your credit and they'll hound you to the day you die. Simple stuff. And they'll call your house and they'll send you letters. And if you live out near Erie, Pennsylvania, they'll send people out who look like sheriff's deputies in Halloween costumes to kind of scare you to come to their fake courtroom where they can then try and intimidate you some more. So when I read this story, I was kind of like, I guess it's gone to the electronic level because now debt collectors are combing through social networking sites. To learn about you. And again, I tell people, whatever you put on, and I don't want to sound like an old man, but whatever you put online, it's there for the taking. It's there for the looking. So what you've got is you've got these people who are combing through your social networking stuff. And this one woman in Tampa, Florida felt violated when she found out that she was being stalked by debt collectors online. Melanie Beecham told WTSP that she had been receiving as many as 20 calls per day from Mark One Financial after she got sick and fell behind on her car payment. She got sick, fell behind on her car payment. So they hounded her, call after call after call. And then they went after her social networking stuff, finding out the company that contacted her sister, other relatives through Facebook. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. Interesting stuff. But again, you know, you or I have a bill, man. They're going to come for us like there's nobody's business. You or I are on the, look at the foreclosure mess. They don't even have the right documents and they're booting people to the curb.
That's ironic because I just went through my text. I got a text from my phone company. You know, your bill's a little bit late, you know. You can call this number and you can use your credit card, blah, 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 blah. And that's just for a simple phone bill, which I pay every month, by the way.
Obviously not on time this month.
Well, you know, so I get the bill and some bills, they will say late charge. So if I'm late, they'll pay me, they'll charge me a couple bucks. I mean, they do hound you. They do hound you.
They know where you live. They will find you. And, you know, that's the thing, you know. If it's you or me, they're going to come for you. These big banksters, they walk away scot-free. Scot-free. Anyway, today Senate Republicans voted unanimously against legislation to close the pay gap between women and men. The Senate voted 58-41 against allowing debate on the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would help end discriminatory pay practices against women. It already passed in the House. You knew it wasn't getting through the Senate. According to the people who were pushing the Equal Pay Act, or the Paycheck Fairness Act, that women earn 77 cents for every dollar that a man earns. Latinos earn about 57 cents, and African Americans earn about 61%, or 61 cents on a dollar.
It's 58-41. It'd be interesting to break down that
Ben Nelson was the sole
Democrat. There's the culprit. Now, why does that not surprise me?
Doesn't surprise me. I was surprised Baucus didn't follow him, and the other Nelson twin from Florida. And you know, there's a bunch of those centrist Democrats that I actually had a friend of mine tell me that, well, I'm against the Paycheck Fairness Act because my wife would lose her job. I said, explain that logic to me. He said, well, see, now this is the logic. Now follow me with this because it takes a little bit of getting to. He said that his wife would lose her job because if the boss had to pay her the same wage that he would have to pay a man, he wouldn't hire his wife because a man would do more work than his wife would do. So that's why that she's paid less. Did you follow that?
I understand what he's saying, but I don't agree with it.
That's what he said. I can't make that stuff up. Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, said it was outrageous and egregious that these senators voted against fair pay. And I agree. You know, if you're doing the same job, you should be paid the exact same wage. Again, not surprising. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce flat against it, just like they were against the Lilly Ledbetter Act of 2009. So, again, no real surprise there. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally
fix anything, that's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open board right outside my door. There's Minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends the illegals home, who's gonna build the wall?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. A rural Wisconsin man blasted his television set with a shotgun after watching Bristol Palin's Dancing with the Stars routine Monday night, saying he was fed up with politics and Palin. He's fed up with her because she's not a very good dancer, according to court documents. Stephen Cowan, 67, of the town of Vermont, Wisconsin, about 15 miles west of Madison, then pointed the gun at his wife, 66-year-old Janice, who escaped and called police, authorities said. And a SWAT team surrounded the house, and they were able to talk him out Tuesday morning after an all-night standoff. He's been charged with second-degree reckless endangerment, and he could be sentenced to 10 years in prison if convicted. And you know what? It might be worth it if you never had to see a Palin again. I'm tired of her. I'm tired of, you know, welcome home to Alaska. Let's go play with bears. And I'm tired of the homophobic daughter who's, you know, going after people using, homophobic language. I'm tired of this one who's trying to make I guess in a way she is working for a couple of bucks to help support those kids, that kid she had. So maybe she won't have to collect welfare. Good for her. But I'm tired of them. Just tired.
But it was just a slight overreaction.
Yeah, but shooting on your TV.
That's funny. It's not funny that he faces 10 years. He shouldn't have. It sounds like he had maybe one too many Budweisers.
Yeah.
Just a few.
I think the crime is when he pointed the gun at the wife and then held off the police. Shooting your TV, yes. I don't believe is a crime. Could be in Wisconsin. I don't know the law. I'm just saying, one would think that, you know, you taking a gun and shooting your own TV, might not be, especially in a rural area.
That's a good question, is it?
I don't know. That's why, evidently you can shoot a car at a gun club, or, well, maybe you can't because they had to cancel that. Because, you know, the same people, if you remember the T-Twizzler tank over here, the Commonwealth Foundation, they had their big Liberty Day.
You mean
their big event?
The big fat ball-headed guy.
I'm not going to say that because I'm Slim Pickens, but. Okay. But, you know, their big Liberty Day was to go out and shoot somebody's truck first. And then Bubba realized what shooting a truck meant and said, no, I want my truck back. So then they got a car, and they're going to have a car shoot. And then some sane, rational people said, well, have you ever heard of a ricochet? And I guess then they changed their mind. And like I was asking people at the time, the gubernatorial candidates at the time who were invited, I was saying, you know, the good thing is maybe you can thin some of the herd. Because, you know, the crazy people, you know, the people who are going to do this, those are the kind of people you want gone.
Maybe you can invite Sarah.
There you go. There's one way of getting rid of her.
We can thin the herd.
Thin the herd. All in favor.
One of the mama grizzlies. You know.
But, you know, going back to this thing we were talking about in the last segment, this Paycheck Fairness Act, there was something you brought up during the break that I thought was really important.
A couple of things. First of all, I think, for people to understand what's happening here, it goes back to a couple years ago when Lilly Ledbetter case came along, and that was a woman who found out after she retired that she had been discriminated against hugely as far as salaries. males in the identical situation were paid a lot more. She found out about it, and then after she retired, she filed a lawsuit. The court ruled that it was too late. So out of that, out of the fact that she was discriminated, came this effort, and they also closed the loophole as far as time. You now have longer to.
No, you have. It's 180 days. It's 180 days from when you find out. Right. Not 180 days from when it happened.
From when it happened, which makes it easier for them to cover up, which is what happened. But anyway, on the AFL-CIO blog, there was an interesting write-up on it, and what they're saying makes a lot of sense. In the problem with discrimination in the private sector, all too often, it's easy. It's easier to do that simply because, especially if you're talking about jobs which are clerical, office jobs, the employer will tell you, we do not. In fact, the company I work for, the management people would never talk about salaries. They are prohibited from talking about salaries. In fact, surveys have found that about 61% of the private sector employees are told you do not talk about it.
Well, my wife managed a medical billing office for years. And they actually fired somebody specifically because she found out how much the person next to her made. Mm-hmm. Which to me, as a union member at the time, was mind-boggling because I'd never heard that. I'm going, really? You don't know how much everybody in the office makes? And my wife is saying, well, I do. I'm the manager. I got to make sure I'm the one who doles out the raises. But the employees, when I was an employee, I didn't know how much the person sitting next to me made.
So you can't go to your employer and say, look, this woman over here is or this person over here.
That's why they do it.
That's exactly right. Doing the exact same job. And she makes, or he makes, 25% more. Why? That's exactly why they do it. So it's a system of secrecy designed to keep wages down.
But again, at the end of all of this, because, I've only had one non-union job, and that was only for a day. To be honest, every job I've ever had, it was laid out in my contract how much you're going to make. This is how much you'll make. And to me, that seems rational. And it doesn't allow there to be this kind of discrimination between men and women, blacks and whites, Latinos and blacks. There's none of that. You're a worker, you're doing the job, and you're paid the rate. And that's the way it should be. But, we've allowed in this country, we've allowed the Chamber of Commerce and employers to get away with this stuff for far too long. And
well,
it's about time.
And you talk about Pennsylvania. Let's take it a step further, Rick. We're in a at-will state. And you might say, well, that's pretty severe to fire somebody simply because they talked. Well, unless you have a contract, a union contract, this state says basically your employer can do almost anything they want to you. They can fire you unless there's two caveats. Unless you have a union contract or unless you violate federal law. Discrimination laws.
Yep. And, it's one of those things, most folks don't understand. I've had some people, I remember one guy specifically, when I lived in Cleveland, they were trying to organize one of these machine shops. And he had been an employee there for like 18 years. And I was just a young kid at the time. And they were trying to organize this machine shop. And the guy, like I said, he'd been there like 18 years, something like that. And what do I need a union for? They've been good to me for these 16 years. I come to work, I do my job. And you try to explain, look, down the road, you don't know what happens. Well, turns out they vote the union down. He votes against it. He gets hurt on the job. And seriously, where a piece of metal flew off of a lathe, wasn't his fault, flew off a lathe, cut through his hand and into his wrist and did a lot of damage. So, they got him back to work, and again, they cut his pay back down because he wasn't producing as many pieces. About 3 months later, kind of the same thing happens, only it comes from a different machine, and he gets hit with this piece of metal. Well, they fire him for having too many accidents. And he's like, how can they fire me? They weren't my fault. And you go, they don't need a reason. I'm surprised they even gave you that reason. I'm surprised they just didn't wait for you to heal and say, thanks, we've replaced you, which is their right to do in at-will states. And that's what we are here in the state of Pennsylvania. You are an at-will state. And the only recourse that you have after they tell you there's the door, thanks, don't come back, is to collect unemployment. And they try and deny some, they try to deny that as well. But that's your only recourse. You know, I hear people say, well, I'm going to go get my lawyer. Well, go ahead. It's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars because no lawyer is going to take that kind of a case on a contingency. They're not. They're not going to take it on what might come in the future. They want paychecks now. So nobody's going to take that case. So good luck on that. I've yet to hear anybody, any of my friends who have been fired from jobs who they thought were wrongly fired for, who have been able to get a lawyer to take their case anywhere. It's just not there. It's just not there. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to take a break in a minute here. Melissa Boteach is the managing director of Half in 10. It's a project by the Center for American Progress on cutting poverty down in half in the next 10 years. I'll talk a little bit about the unemployment problems. But before we go, I just want to – it's amazing to me that we're still talking about giving tax cuts to the top 2%. $700 billion. $700 billion to people who don't need the money. At the same time, we're talking about kicking 2 million people off of unemployment. Think about that for a minute. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Save the USA and resume the size of mine.